And also, just continuing on the same subject, you see.
Yes.
The section was very, very quick in perceiving when one of his staff was tilting the swale there. Mm-hmm. You know, he had extremely sensitive antenna to that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And a situation like that, how would he handle that?
Well, what he would do is, he would, as it were, raise the conversation to himself.
Okay.
For a while. Hmm? Uh-huh. While the dust was allowed to settle. Uh-huh. Hmm? The files of the period would be full of interlocutors or people involved, if not directly, indirectly, saying, "Sectional, it's time you got into this personally." You know, it happened time and time again, mm-hmm. on almost every issue, mm-hmm. at some stage, mm-hmm. the parties to the dispute, mm-hmm. or those directly involved, or those supportive of one side or the other, mm-hmm. Said to the sectional, either orally in his room or even in letters, mm-hmm. that, you know, we would like you to get personally involved in it.
Yeah. Right.
Now that's a soft way of saying we're having problems with your official, mm-hmm. who's handling this matter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We aren't prepared to say his persona non grata, mm-hmm. but could you please just take this in hand for a while?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you will find that over and over again in the files of this period.
Okay.
Now, there, what the sectional did, two things. He didn't junk the people who was working for him, mm-hmm. but he, by his personal interventions at critical moments, brought the thing back on track.
Okay.
He supported those who were working for him. He gave them the cover of his own personality when they needed it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But there were sort of half-muted complaints,
mm-hmm.
or half-muted concerns about whether one or the other of them was tilting. He would just lift the thing to himself for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Let the thing stabilize again.
Discuss that with them in terms of it
would be kind of, he would either discuss it, or he would hint it, or he would imply it, or he would handle it differently.
And he would just handle it differently.
Just handle it differently, put the thing back on track,
yeah.
and the train would start running again.
Okay, interesting.
But this happened, and I won't mention names and I won't mention instances, but this happened time and time again, uh-huh. on almost every issue.
But that's a very interesting style of handling that kind of situation,
yes,
because other people,
yes.
might just get rid of the person.
But he didn't do
but
that.
Then you would have to bring in someone else, re-educate them.
This is the whole thing,
yeah,
you see.
Yeah.
This was the whole thing.
Yeah.
And this is why in Mr. Vesper's period, you didn't have a string of UN people being changed.
No, I know.
It was an extraordinary situation that the inner circle of Mr. Bezekwer, in the 10 years of his two terms,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
we had no major changes.
That's right.
Except when people left for other reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
But Don Javier didn't kick people out.
Right.
You see
the same names of people handling a particular issue,
yes.
over and over and over,
over
again.
And over again. But also, you see, what happened was, you see, his way of functioning. You see, if he gave you his trust, then he sort of he expected it as reciprocally that you would function in a way that would be sensible. You see.
Uh-huh.
And if you got slightly bizarre. he would lift the thing to himself for a while, so the person dealing with the question would understand. Look,
yeah.
I better shape up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's quite obvious that the sectional, you know, is having to do this himself. There's a reason for it.
Right.
And the parties would immediately start praising the sectional excessively.
Right.
The person, the staff member dealing with, would realize that, you know, how come, you see?
Right.
So they begin to see what he is doing.
Right.
To bring an issue back onto track.
So it's a great leadership quality.
Well, it was a very, it was a very refined leadership quality.
Yeah.
Leaders have different ways of doing things. Some hire and fire, some keep changing, but this was his particular way, you see.
Mm-hmm.
It was very much it was a very patriarchal way of doing things. You know, I mean, it was the head of a family's way of doing things. You see.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But if you have that trust and those expectations that the people will perform at a certain level, then you almost have to live up to that.
But this is the thing, you see. So you don't excommunicate a son or a daughter of yours. Right. So Pezekwa didn't excommunicate staff members.
Right.
But when the need arose, he just took the thing himself, mm-hmm. and let it ran it under his own auspices. And then he would say, well, when the thing would be moving again, well, the work would go on in the manner accustomed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting and I think a very admirable means by which to deal with that sort of thing.
Well, I must say, you see, he has his critics.
Yeah.
Because he didn't shake up this place all the time, you see. And yet, let's face it, I mean, after the Group of 18 report, he shook up this place more than any other Secretary General ever has, you see. The changes that were made in the post-Group of 18 period in terms of staff reductions,
right.
The top echelon changes and all, it was not an easy affair.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a great deal of it done, you see.
Yeah, yeah.
But his manner was not to use a bludgeon on people.
Right, yeah. Yeah. He was sensitive to...
He was very sensitive to the feelings of people.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And on that I can speak with some authority, because I did work with him all these years, you see,
mm-hmm.
in fair proximity. And sometimes I would say to him, Secretary, you've got an awful personal problem.
Mm-hmm.
But X or Y is behaving terribly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the way in which he's carrying on is bad for you, bad for the organization, bad
yeah.
for the whole situation, you see.
Right.
But he would just sort of, he would say, yes, I know what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
But his way of dealing with it would be his own.
Mm-hmm. Right. All right. Now, the other question that I wanted to talk to you about was a completely different issue. Is the transition in the five permanent members of the Security Council from Soviet Union holding position to Russia holding that position as a permanent member of the five and the Security Council. How did that evolve? Because what were the controversies as far as that was concerned? Was it totally accepted by the other?
Well, you see, in the event, the way it was handled precluded the possibility of controversy. I think that amongst the five, there had been a lot of private consultations leading up to the letter from Yeltsin on Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that the ground had been prepared amongst the permanent members as to the way in which the succession should take place.
Mm-hmm.
Even the letters that were written by the Soviet president in his last act as a Soviet president,
mm-hmm.
Were, so to speak, the wording had more or less been the subject of prior discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So that it would not pose a kind of a huge controversy on the night before Christmas in New York.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, that night the Secretary General was not in. He was at home on Christmas Eve. And he phoned me from Sutton Place to say that I had a call from Yuli Vorontsov. He'll be getting in touch with you.
And who, you got a call from whom?
From Yuli Vorontsov.
Oh, okay.
And he'll be getting in touch with you.
Mm-hmm.
Please. It's on the subject.
Mm-hmm.
So soon after, Vorontsov called me and said he wanted to see me, and that he'd been told by Mr. Pezekwa that while Mr. Pezekwa couldn't come in, because he was not, I think he had a flu or something that day.
Mm-hmm.
He said Mr. Pezekwa had told him that if I see you, Mr. Dahl, it's as if I have seen him.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that I can tell Moscow that the letter has been given to the Secretary General.
Okay.
So Vorontsov came. And he brought this letter from Yeltsin.
Yeltsin, okay.
Yes. It was the last letter which Yeltsin wrote to the President of the Soviet Union, mm-hmm. more or less. Mm-hmm. And certainly the last letter that Vorontsov delivered to anybody as the ambassador, permanent representative of the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And when he brought the letter, he also brought the flag mm-hmm. of the Russian Federation. Mm-hmm. And he gave it to me I had asked Karl Fleischhauer to join me for the meeting. Mm-hmm. And he gave it to me in a meeting which will resonate in my mind, mm-hmm. because there was about it, of course, truly a sense of history.
Absolutely, yeah.
There was a sense of history about it. And Mr. Vorontsov, after giving me the letter, said to me, "Now, Mr. Art, this is my last act as Soviet ambassador." Mm-hmm. And I couldn't help observing to Mr. Vorontsov at that time that countries change their names, but the people of countries and families of countries continue. Mm-hmm. And the Vorontsovs had done great service in Moscow long before the Soviet Union was ever created.
That's right, yeah.
It
yeah.
is, after all, a family that's somewhat that's ancient
yeah, historic.
In the services to Russia. Mm-hmm. And I said to Vorontsov, and I'm sure that will continue to be the case in the future. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yuri Vorontsov, I think, was quite touched by this observation, mm-hmm. because the drama of the moment obviously hadn't escaped him.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
You see.
Yeah.
But that, in essence, was it.
Yeah, but symbolized also by bringing the flag.
But it is symbolized also by bringing the flag.
Yeah.
That night, I prepared for the Secretary-General a letter to the President of the Security Council, who, ironically, was Yuri Vorontsov. And a letter to the President of the General Assembly indicating what had transpired.
Right.
And I prepared a telegram from the Secretary General to all executive heads of agencies and programs, mm-hmm. informing them, so that the transition could be without confusion, you see.
Right.
The Secretary General was kind enough to agree to the text. We sent the letters home, we signed them at home, and we had them all dispatched mm-hmm. before Christmas Eve turned to Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. But when the office opened on the day after Christmas, the new flag was put on the mast mm-hmm. without a ceremony, because it wasn't a new member state.
That's right, yeah.
But that. Now, in other words, the confusion that could have resulted from one hell of a battle about the charter where the Soviet Union is mentioned and Russia and all the rest of it, it was avoided.
Yeah. Well, so amongst the other members, the four remaining permanent members of the Security Council, there was no contradiction to that.
No, notion. There wasn't, and I have reason to believe that the matter had been discussed quite carefully between them.
Yeah. What about the other republics of the Soviet Union?
Well, you see, you must remember that they had already agreed, more or less, or they had agreed before, they agreed soon after, that in this matter, but then that whole thing had been sorted out, you see. Mm-hmm. They'd been having their meetings variously in Minsk and here and there and Almaty and so
right.
on and so forth,
yeah,
you see.
Yeah.
So that they had this matter had been sorted out over there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there wasn't really any talk about having some kind of rotation in that.
No. If there was such discussion in what was the Soviet Union at some stage, I don't know. Uh-huh. But I do not believe it happened.
Uh-huh. And but that did not become an issue.
It did not become an issue.
Here.
No, what could have become an issue here was to raise the whole question, from as it were, from scratch. As to the composition of the Security Council.
Right.
But I don't think the world was ready for that at the time.
Yeah.
We were, for one thing, it was Christmas Eve. For another, and it's supposed to be a season of peace.
Right.
But there was also the question that the UN was so deeply engaged in so many serious undertakings at the time that I won't say the frivolity, but the added burden of confusion and a mad discussion at that moment of the composition of the council and the permanent members and all the rest of it, would have thrown the whole organization into a kind of a whirlwind.
Absolutely, absolutely.
From which it would never have been able to come out, you know, in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact of the matter is that the review of the membership of the council is going to be an increasing issue.
Right.
But again, it has to be central. It has to be discussed in a rational way, on the basis of thought, of papers, of ideas, and not just the pressure that at this moment this has to be done.
Yeah, huh? Because
it is too serious. It is too serious a matter.
Right.
And this, you know, we were talking earlier about will, and the pushing of one's will.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the case of the Security Council, this is one issue which should not just be solved by the pressure of one country's or two countries' will.
Well,
you see?
Yeah, uh-huh.
In other words, in this one, mm-hmm. it would be very important for the organization that the review of the charter in relation to the membership of the council.
Mm-hmm. Because it goes back to the charter itself.
Yeah, that this should be done with utmost thought,
yeah.
and utmost care.
Right.
My own feeling is that it's necessary to review the membership of the Security Council. That's my personal feeling.
Right.
But the way in which the council's membership is reviewed, and the role of the permanent members, and the number, and so on and so forth, that process has to be one of great profundity.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a complicated issue.
Yeah.
Well, I thank you very, very much.
Not sure.
This was very enlightening, and I appreciate your going into the details of the issues in this manner.
Not
it's very helpful.
Not
so
me.
Thank you.
Not